got out of the military 1 month before her unit was deployed to Iraq.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. And we're going to be starting an hour early, Cruzmos and Cosmos. And as always, we're here tickling the belly of the beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. We're starting an hour early because we have a full program, very informative, and we have some live entertainment in about an hour. Now, we have with us today visiting Ruth Valdez, and she is with the People Against Chemical Trespass Spraying, also No Pesticides on the People, and she is with one of the group, the ad hoc community groups that sprang up after the aerial spraying last November. I'm sure you all remember that. We were targeted with a toxic chemical, Checkmate, and she's here to talk to you about the damage that was inflicted on us and to let us know that it's not halted permanently. We are still in danger of being sprayed. And Ruth is, here's Ruth, and she's going to begin talking about this.
Hi, Cynthia. Good to be here.
Oh, wonderful to have you, and thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. I want to mention up front that PACT, People Against Chemical Trespass, is part of our local WILF, which is Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And so we're part of a committee that they have on democracy versus corporations. And basically what we say is no pesticides on people. Some people wonder, well, is it actually a danger? You know, maybe they don't personally know anyone who got sick. Well, the CDFA, which is California Department of Food and Agriculture, when they were said it was just pheromones, and that's what most people believed for a long time. But when they were finally forced to disclose what the inert ingredients consist of, they weren't very inert at all. One was cancer-causing, another was mutagenic, meaning it can damage our DNA, and another one was a hormone disruptor. So to talk about the damage last year, there were 200 people severely ill, 643 or more affected by it, two babies that almost died, one 11-month-old baby who had been in perfect health, never had any problems, stopped breathing. And that's one of the known effects that these chemicals can have. So there were tremendous efforts to get it done, to get it postponed. For example, For example, there was heroic work, and I want to honor that work. There were 37 resolutions in different counties around the San Francisco Bay Area.
So they targeted the whole Central Coast.
That was the plan after Monterey and Santa Cruz, that they would target 13 other counties. They've now expanded that to 56, which is almost all of California. So there were resolutions, there were videos made, there were in-depth investigations made, and we'll talk about some of those today. Several lawsuits filed. Dan Harder, up at UCSC, in charge of the Arboretum, made a trip at his own expense to New Zealand to find out what they do with the moth there. Basically, they don't do anything because it's not necessary.
So this was basically people just coming together, outraged. Spending their own money, their own time. Of course, a lot of friendships were made, but it's amazing. And how successful, and yet the battle continues.
So finally, with all of that, and some lawsuits, they were able to get it temporarily postponed until after the environmental impact report is done. And then they, meaning the state agency, will decide what they're going to do with us.
And when is that environmental impact report scheduled to be completed?
I don't have the answer to that. I don't know when exactly it's due to be to complete it. I've heard January, but that I believe is a guess.
Mm-hmm.
What
are the state plans right now?
Okay, this the as the state plans that we've heard about are, one, they're still planning what was stopped was the aerial spraying over urban areas. They are still planning, as far as any of us have ever heard, to do aerial spraying over the rural areas, which happens to be where I live, and lots of other people who live up in the hills and the mountains around Santa Cruz. That and all the forests are due to be aerial sprayed. As far as the urban areas now, they've been talking about a couple different methods. Twist ties, something they call, I believe they call it splat, where they spray this stuff on telephone poles. But of course, you know, it's going to go past the poles into people's yards and everything. And delivering the spray by truck instead of airplanes. So I've seen these sprays by truck in the Caribbean. The fog of the spray is like 20 feet high, and it goes everywhere. And people run and close their windows. But the thing that's different about this spray, it's a time release. So you can't just, like, leave the county for a week and then come back. It's time release, and their plan would be, has been, to do it every month for up to 3 years. And so there would be continual saturation of these really toxic pesticides for, you know, continually.
Yeah, and time released every 30 days into the environment, time released, the chemicals would continue.
Yeah,
they release. That's appalling.
They would be continually active all that time. So there are a lot of, as you can imagine, efforts underway. Oh, another indication of what we can expect is Mr. Osama Elise, who's the director of Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, was at a roundtable discussion with Congresswoman Jackie Speier. I'm not sure about the pronunciation of her name. That was September 30th. And when he was finally pinned down, this is what he said. Aerial spray currently is postponed, and the decision whether to resume it will be made after the environmental impact report. In other words, there is no plan to really stop it.
And that's just the aerial spraying. There is not a plan in place to stop the twist ties and the splat.
It's all unknown. You know, the point is that they are going to decide. They're not going to listen to any of the scientific investigations that have been made by university professors and other qualified people. So some of the strategies that are happening currently, one, there's an effort, and Sam Farr is active in this, to delist the moth. In other words, to change it from a Class A to a Class C or something like that, where, in other words, it's just one more benign moth and not an emergency. There are efforts underway to remove the California state preemptive law, which incredibly is on the books and says that local communities cannot make any local laws about pesticides in their own community.
Well, who does make those decisions now?
These state agencies, unelected appointees, not really answerable to anybody. One of the other things I've learned is there's no oversight of their department. They are their own oversight.
So I wonder how this all came about. Well, anyway.
Let me finish with some of the other strategies here. A lawsuit was filed just last week that you might have seen it in the Sentinel, filed in San Francisco court there, the North Coast Rivers Alliance, and other local people. Tony Madrigal, our city council member, was there, several mayors, local citizens. And the object of that lawsuit is to overturn the EPA decision that it's okay to go ahead. So these all get delays. And these are all examples of working through the existing agencies, the regulatory agencies. And in the end, they are the ones that decide, But we can't depend on them, obviously, to decide for our safety.
And our health.
And, so what we're doing is a little bit different. We're all in this together, and everybody's doing what they can. What we're doing is a rights-based ordinance.
And this is the pesticides and chemical trespassing ordinance that you've been working on.
Yeah.
No pesticides on people is working on
right.
That.
Where's the actual title of it? It's kind of long.
Oh.
Local, Santa Cruz City, local control pesticide and chemical trespass ordinance is the name of it.
And how does that differ?
How did we get started on this?
And how does that differ from the other approaches?
It's different in that it's standing up for our rights, and I want to talk quite a bit about that. And it's a different approach in that instead of negotiating with these regulatory bodies, we're making our own local law. And yes, that does go against the state preemptive legislation, but we'll get into that later. There are reasons why one should prevail over the other. This basically started after the spray. One of the things that people did, and that the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom participated in, and also CAS, the California Alliance to Stop the Spray, participated in what was called a democracy school. And this was put on by a group called CELDEF, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And they've been active in various parts of the country, helping local communities write ordinances to protect their safety. Some of them have been protected against uranium mining right on the side of their town. Some of them hog sludge, which turns out to be toxic, things like that. They've written 123 of these similar to ours, rights-based ordinances. And in all cases, the corporations have ceased their dirty work. Six of them were challenged, but even though they were challenged, the corporations never came back to continue their intrusions.
So they were successful.
So it's different than in that it's outside of regulatory law, and it's based on our inalienable rights, and it's based on this question
found in the Constitution.
I will get into exactly where those rights come from. It's based on a question of who decides. So in our case, we are making local law, protecting our safety here where we live. And that's why we're part of the WILF committee, which is the Democracy versus Corporations, because we are rescuing democracy and challenging the power of corporations to do this harm to us. So, Cynthia, did you have some other questions before I talk about what the ordinance actually does?
I was wondering how I could get, or maybe our listeners can get information on the other ordinances that have been successful and what web page to refer to if there is
good
one.
Good question. Thank you.
Sure.
And that's all on the CELDEF website, and that's where you would find it.
How do you spell
Community
CELDEF?
Environmental Legal Defense Fund. I've forgotten if it's .org or what, but I'm sure you can Google it and find everything that they've done.
CELDEF.
CELDEF is the acronym.
I wonder if they Googled CELDEF Democracy School, they'd be able to.
It's possible. On CELDEF, on their website, you'll find some great articles. And I'm sure they would have information about their democracy school because they offer that all over the country.
And it's basically taking back our democracy.
Yeah, it's basically...
Because it is being threatened by these corporations, I can see
basically
that.
Asserting that we do have democratic rights.
I just want to intervene for a moment. If anyone wants to talk directly, you can call in, ask some questions, or discuss something here with Ruth at 427-3772. Or 469-3119. We welcome any call-ins.
So what the ordinance actually does, it bans corporations from engaging in the bulk application of pesticides within the city limits. It bans persons and government agencies from using corporations to engage in the bulk application of pesticides in the city limits. It establishes strict liability and burden of proof standards for pesticide and chemical trespass. It recognizes and enforces the rights of residents to defend the rights of natural communities and ecosystems. And it asserts the fundamental and inalienable right of the people of the city of Santa Cruz to govern themselves and the community where we live. And going back to ecosystems, I want to mention that this same group, CELDEF, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, in the last year worked with the government of, was it Bolivia or Ecuador? I think it was Ecuador. Worked with the government of Ecuador on their new constitution. And as far as we know, it's the only constitution in the world that says right in it that natural ecosystems have rights that cannot be damaged. And so in a way, we feel like this is a movement, a grassroots movement, mm-hmm. and you know, we feel honored to kind of be at the beginning of it.
And I feel that is so important, and hopefully now that we have a new president-elect, that will be understood. A native belief is that we are all related, and what right do we have to infringe our ways and basically kill? Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so let's talk about some of the rights on which it's based. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I did not have time this morning to print out the actual ordinance, but I can tell you.
In the Constitution, the Bill of Rights.
Let's see. Okay, sorry about this. I have to shuffle a paper here. The California State Constitution, for example, says, and this is a quote, all people have inalienable rights, and among these are pursuing and obtaining safety. And when they say inalienable rights, these are spelled out in other documents as well, the Declaration of Independence, and I'm sorry I don't have all those quotes with me, but I want to mention that anybody who wants more detailed information on this, if you will email me at PACTSC, so that's People Against Chemical Trespass, SC, PACTSC at gmail.com, I will send you the original documents, the studies and investigations that were done. So I want to give you the definition of inalienable. You know, ever since we were children, we've maybe read that phrase.
And yes.
What does inalienable mean? It means inviolable, sacred, cannot be impeded by civil government, cannot be undone by man, incapable of being surrendered or transferred. And these are the rights that are cited in this ordinance and upon which it's based.
Well, they've definitely been violated.
I'm having a hard time.
They've definitely been violated.
And the interesting thing about finding this in the California Constitution is that, as we know, the Constitution of the state, the same as the federal, the Constitution prevails over any law that might be passed in the California legislature. So if it goes against the state constitution, then it can be shown to be not valid. So if our right to safety doesn't seem to be prevailing right now, then that's something that we need to fix. And the ordinance is one way to fix this. It has teeth, and it can ban this pesticide. And an important point here is, yes, we may get past the light brown apple moth, but the future, there's always going to be something.
They'd fly.
And that's why this is important to establish our rights. The thing about rights, of course, is they're never lost. They may be hidden. They may be overrun temporarily. But and obviously, in this case, they've been overrun. But the important thing to do here is that we can't let bad laws stand, because law in general depends on precedence. And the longer that a bad law stands, the harder it will be to overcome it.
And I find it encouraging that other communities have been successful, so that we're not reinventing the wheel here.
Very important, right. And so this ordinance can work for us, but I think for many people, many of us, the hardest obstacle to overcome is that we don't seem to really believe with conviction that we actually have these rights already, that we can actually say, no, we have these rights.
Well, I was never taught that in school, that we have this specific right to safety.
Yeah. We always hear about how we have freedoms and rights, but
they're giving lip service sometimes.
In the last, 40 or 50 years, you have to really look to find anybody who's standing up for them. Largely, they've been overrun,
eroded,
as we know. So the government really does depend on the consent of the government. So all of us, I think, need to really think deeply about why so many of us lack certainty that we can assert our rights, and how, as a society, we got into this sheep mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is the moth an emergency? Is it a threat to agriculture? Well, it's bogus.
These were claims by the state.
This was claimed by the State Department of Food and Agriculture, that it was emergency, that it's doing crop damage. But the truth is, no documented crop damage has been found in California at all, or the U.S. This moth has been in New Zealand for about 150 years and Hawaii for 100 years. It's easily controlled. They don't use heavy pesticides. And in Europe, they think we're kind of silly. They have the same moth and they don't consider it a problem. New Zealand did at one time try pesticides to eradicate the light brown apple moth.
What happened?
What they found is, after the treatment, the moth increased drastically. The reason being, of course, that they had killed off most of the predators take care of that moth.
Well, Ruth, why is the state working so hard and persistently to, why are they so determined to keep spraying us? Or
to continue this, right. Why? I mean,
why?
It's hard to understand. Why would they be trying to do this? Especially now that they know there's a serious doubt about its safety, it just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't at all.
And a friend of mine's wife, one of the investigators' wives, told him, yeah, if you can't understand it, what we have to do is follow the money.
Yes.
Follow the
I've
money.
I've heard that before.
And before we take a break, I want to give you our website again. That's www.peopleagainstchemicaltrespass.org. I want to invite you to come to our December 6th at the Loudoun Nelson Human Rights Fair. We'll have a table there. Just look for PACT, and we're going to have two videos, very informative, and petitions for you to sign. And December 11th, there's a little small fundraiser at Fresh Choice. After 4 o'clock on Thursday, December 11th, 15% will go to us, to PAC, to continue right. funding our work, because basically we're a group of volunteers who've been up to now funding it ourselves. And by the way, we welcome donations. So to get the coupon for that Fresh Choice dinner and fundraiser, you have to pay for the dinner. If you email me at PACT, PACTSC, at gmail.com. And so I believe we're going to take a little break now, and afterwards right. we're going to talk about why are they so determined to continue this program that's been debunked.
I know. Basically, we're going to take a short break, and what I want to ask, if you enjoy what you're listening to here and the other shows, I highly suggest that you, if you can, make a check payable to FRSC, Free Radio, Santa Cruz, and you can mail the check to Post Office Box 7507 Santa Cruz 95061. Or you can make a PayPal donation to www.freakradio.org. And if you want to join in the conversation here, give us a call at 427-3772 or 469-3119. We're going to continue here because we don't have a whole lot of time. Shortly after this, we're going to be listening to some local musicians that Coral has brought in. And I'm Janaya, and you're listening to Ruth Valdez talk about no pesticides on people. And we do have some information on the fraud, basically, and deception, and the myths that we were told. And she has some information about the lies that we were told and what the truth is about that. And we'll be getting into that as we proceed.
So, going back to that question, what is CDFA's, the state agency's, motivation to go against reason, to go against all the legitimate scientific investigations and studies that have been done, to knowingly damage people again, and to continue and carry this on in the other 56 counties of the state of California? Well, one thing that was found out is that this state department, California Department of Food and Agriculture, gets $100 million per year, every year, as long as they carry on this program or appear to be carrying it on. And this is taxpayer money. It comes from Homeland Security because A.J. Kawamura, the secretary of the Department of California Department of Food and Agriculture, declared this moth was an emergency. So if they continue the program or continue to be working to eradicate this harmless moth, they get $100 million per year. The current plans, we don't know what they're going to carry out, but plans that they already made say spraying monthly, every month, and it's a time release, so that's continual saturation, every month up to 3 years and possibly up to 10 years.
Did you say every month?
Every month.
Be sprayed?
Every month.
Wow.
Every
no
month.
Idea.
Yeah. And then the other thing about this money, which is, it's basically a boondoggle. I mean, this is that Homeland Security money is meant for real emergencies. And this
And the moth was declared an emergency, wasn't it, last year? An emergency because of the infestation of the light brown apple moth.
They called it an emergency officially. And that's how they qualify for the money.
And is it still being determined? Is it still an emergency, do you know?
They're still saying that it's an emergency, in spite of all the studies and in spite of the things that have been refuted. So the interesting thing about this money, it doesn't have to all be spent on trying to eradicate the moth. They can spend it any way they wish, just so they show they're still working on this eradication. And scientists say this moth can never be completely eradicated. So they've kind of got a built-in lifetime funnel into that Homeland Security money. And by the way, the Sutera company that manufactures this pesticide, which is called Checkmate, is one of the really largest campaign donations to Arnold Schwarzenegger's campaign.
It doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So another kind of revealing, startling statement is that they're not planning to spray any agricultural crops. They're planning to spray urban areas, rural areas, and forests. And I think I mentioned earlier that rural areas, where many, many of us live up in the hills and so on, are still, the plans, as far as we know, are to, they haven't said otherwise, are still to do the overhead aerial spraying. So is this a boondoggle? Is it bogus? Well, I know you can connect the dots.
Why are they spraying us?
Yeah, why
Santa
us?
Cruz,
That's another interesting thing, is they found out that San Francisco County has a much denser population of this apple moth. So really? Why did they choose Monterey and Santa Cruz counties to do their testing on? We don't know. And when I say testing, people are saying it's actually a medical experiment.
That's what it felt like to me last year. I felt like we were guinea pigs in a medical experiment,
watching friends of mine get ill. Yeah.
And our cats.
And here's a quote from one study. I believe this one was done by Professor Glenn Chase. He's a professor in the Monterey area, who's taught at three of the universities there in the Monterey area. He says, in the last 100 years, there were, or maybe this came from Foster Gamble. I'm sorry. One or the other. They're both studies that I can email to you and that you'll find on our website. Our website is just up this week, so there's not a lot on it yet, but within a week or two, all of these studies will be up there for you to check out. So in the last 100 years, there were at least 30 documented cases, and this is a quote from that study, of U.S. government agencies, including the United States Department of Agriculture, the EPA, the Army, the Navy, the CIA, the Department of Defense, and so on, documented cases.
It was not included.
Yeah. Of them intentionally testing harmful chemicals covertly on human populations, and 14 of these involved aerial spraying. And one of the most shocking cases was in 1994, U.S. military aircraft began dropping a gel substance on the town of Oakville near the Pacific coast. Everybody in town came down with flu and pneumonia-like symptoms. Mm. Some people were hospitalized. Some people remained ill for months afterwards. Pets and barnyard animals died. Mm. Afterwards, it's always afterwards, right? Because they don't tell us they're going to do this and they don't disclose what the ingredients are. Afterwards, the gel material was tested by a number of labs. And what they found was nasty bacteria, including a modified version of Pseudomonas fluorescens. And this is something that is cited in over 160 military papers as an experimental biowarfare bacteria. So if we wonder about weapons of mass destruction, these are being tested, and that one was tested on the people of Oakville.
Now, before we came on the program, you had talked to me a bit about the Nuremberg Code.
Right, and talking about the Nuremberg, did I put that? I'll look for that in a minute.
We want to be sure and go back to that. Yes.
So there were federal and state laws already in place to prohibit this medical experimentation on people. Oh, here it is. Yeah. There were presidential orders to protect people from particle pollution. And the thing about this spray is the particles are less than 10, I think they're called microns. they are so small that when they enter your lungs, you cannot expel them from your lungs. They go right into your bloodstream.
That's what we experienced. That's what we were subjected to.
That's what we were subjected to. And this kind of medical experimentation on people is also outlawed by a congressional moratorium. And it says, quote, shall not permit the use of pregnant women, infants, or children, and shall be consistent with the Nuremberg Code. Well, you know, the Nuremberg Code came out of the Nuremberg trials after the horrible things that were done during World War II.
The Nazi experiments.
The Nazi medical experiments. And here's what it says, quote, that any medical experimentation that's done must, quote, have voluntary consent. No, we didn't. Protect the subject against even remote possibilities of injury, or disability, or death. No, they didn't do that. And the subject must be at liberty to bring the experiment to an end. Well, that's what we'd like to bring this experiment to an end.
And so, it's happening nationally, too. It's not just happening in Santa Cruz. It's happening in other communities, from what I'm understanding.
The plan is...
we're not alone in this.
The original plan, of course, was Santa Cruz and Monterey, which they did. And then they had planned immediately to go ahead with 13 other counties, among them San Francisco, Berkeley, Marin County. What am I forgetting? All the counties up around the San Francisco Bay Area, who all got busy and all passed resolutions and lawsuits and so on. So, you know, we're basically all working together on this.
Largely communities of liberals and minorities.
Pardon?
Largely communities of liberals and minorities.
Isn't that true? Yeah, you know, somebody said about... somebody said, yeah... wipe out all those liberals in California.
Oh, boy.
I want to express gratitude to all the people who worked this last year, all the studies, investigations, trip to New Zealand, all that work that was done. I want to especially credit these two studies by Foster Gamble and Professor Glenn Chase, and you'll find those on our website in a week or two, or you can Google them and find them. You'll also find them at www.stopthespray.org. You'll find a lot of this information there also.
And lbmspray.com.
And lbmspray.com. And there are even others. Yeah,
yes.
And I think most of them link to each other, so if you go to
they
one,
do.
Yeah, you get linked to the other.
So what can people do to help you?
Yeah, this is so important because this
involved.
Is just one assault on our safety and our health and our rights, but you know there are going to be others. There's always going to be other pests with the global transportation and trade that we have now and so on. So it's important for that reason also. So first... there are places where you can sign a petition, and in a week or so, you'll also be able to sign it online. And I want to mention the website again, peopleagainstchemicaltrespass.org. I think the most fundamental thing you can do is make the decision in your own heart and mind that you're going to stand up for your right to safety, because if we